This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
According to a firm that specializes in outplacement, Challenger Gray and Christmas, planned layoffs increased in May for the second month in a row. 73,368 jobs were cut last month, compared to 72,184 in April. The firm reported that job cuts in the last 4 months averaged at 100,000 per month, well above the average of 51,000 jobs lost per month before the recession.
Republicans in the House of Representatives may introduce legislation to reprivatize airport security and screening services. The Transportation Security Administration, created after the 2001 terrorist attacks on New York and Washington, hired 65,000 people and spent more than $10 billion in the last 2.5 years. Now, House Republicans think the old system of private companies providing airport security would be more efficient and less stressful on the flying public. Some 100 airports around the country plan to invoke a clause in the TSA legislation which would allow them to opt out and reprivatize screening staff later this year, and the TSA itself has already cut loose a quarter of its personnel.
When oilfield services giant Halliburton received a controversial multi-billion dollar no-bid contract to rebuild Iraq, suspicion arose that former Halliburton chief executive and now vice president Dick Cheney tipped the Pentagon in Halliburton's favor. Though Cheney publicly denies any hand in arranging the deal, Time magazine reports there's clear evidence that Cheney did indeed coordinate the contract. Time says a leaked email tipped them off. Vermont Democrat Senator Patrick Leahy is planning congressional hearings on the matter.
Facing a funding crunch of some $70 million next year, the city of Pittsburgh is developing a controversial plan to slash city services, and emergency responders may take the brunt of the cuts. A recently unveiled financial recovery plan would require the closure of 20% of the city's fire stations and would force all remaining firefighters to take a 17% cut in their base pay next year. Police officers would also be hit hard. The city plan calls for the elimination of seniority-based job selection and would force cops to work without pay when called to testify in court.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A report by the Department of Veterans Affairs shows U.S. veterans face an increased risk of becoming homeless. Women who served in the military are 3.6 times more likely to end up living on the street, and men face a 1.4% increased risk. Veterans compose 9% of the U.S. population, but make up a remarkable 33% of the male homeless population.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
My. The highly touted benefits of globalizing America's high-tech jobs have just gotten a political comeuppance. Not in our country, not yet, but in a country that has been hailed by Washington, Wall Street, and the media as one of the chief beneficiaries of the outsourcing of our middle-class jobs, India. Endless articles have been written about the sudden economic boom in the gleaming new high-tech centers of southern India. Has the CEOs of Dell, Microsoft, Intel, and the rest fattened their bottom lines by replacing American programmers and engineers with much cheaper ones in India? We were told that such self-serving outsourcing was really a morally responsible move, for it was generating a newly affluent upper middle class over there, a golden example of the boundless glories of corporate globalization. But what they didn't tell us is that this so-called boom went only an inch deep, not touching the vast majority of this nation's 1 billion people, much less lifting them out of grinding poverty and drudgery. While the government launched a PR campaign it called India Shining to tout the new high-tech economy, two-thirds of the people still depend on agriculture to eke out a living. 300 million Indians still live on less than a dollar a day, and thousands of villages have no schools, hospitals, or clean water. Indeed, the lives of the majority have worsened, for the government slashed public services, privatized agencies, cut wages, and eliminated millions of jobs in an effort to attract foreign capital and offer subsidies to high-tech moguls. But now, the people have had their say on India shining. In last month's elections, by an overwhelming majority, they dumped the prime minister, his ruling party, and the state officials who had engineered the sellout to global corporate powers. This is Jim Hightower saying, the popular rebellion against clueless corporate plutocrats and politicians has truly gone global, and America is ripe for it too.
Hello from Athens, Greece, folks. Now, if you're a big sports fan like me, this is the place to be. They've got them all. Take fencing. My sword of choice is always the foil over the saber in F.A. You've got to see it. That's why Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels have created the Wake Up a Winner sweepstakes. You could win a trip to the big events in Athens. To enter, visit choicehotels.com, or every time you stay at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels this summer, you'll get a game piece with a chance to win hundreds of prizes and discounts off your next stay. Wake up a winner. To book, call 800-4-CHOICE or go to choicehotels.com. Well, I'm off to rhythmic gymnastics, where it always comes down to who nails the tightest ribbon snake. Choice Hotels. We'll see you there.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Promotion runs June 7th through August 29th, 2004. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit choicehotels.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And happy Wednesday. Greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, all around the planet, and perhaps even into the depths of outer space, on the Sirius satellite system, on Cable Radio Network, on RadioPower.org, archives at WhiteRoseSociety.org. You can find our website, TomHartman.com. The chat room is already filling up. You can link off TomHartman.com and get into there. And, of course, on terrestrial radio stations, that's like good old-fashioned AM radio stations, my favorites from coast to coast. And so pleased to have the affiliates that we have. And you know, here we go. Another day, another 3 hours of truth in broadcasting. And occasionally tongue-in-cheek. In fact, let's start out with a Ralph Nader alert. This from the Borowitz Report. Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. Nader seeks presidency of Iraq. There's actually a serious side to this. I'll get to that in just a second. Just hours after Sheikh Ghazi al-Yawar was selected as the interim president of Iraq, Ralph Nader announced that he would launch his own bid to become Iraqi president in order to give the people of Iraq, quote, a genuine choice, unquote. Mr. Nader said at his first Baghdad press conference, over the past few days, I've seen various names floated for president of Iraq, and I've come to the conclusion that there's not a dinar's worth of difference between them. As I cross this great land of theirs, I sense that the Iraqi people want Ralph Nader in this race. But even as Mr. Nader spoke in glowing terms of his bid, prominent Sunnis and Shiites excoriated his decision, calling the candidate a spoiler and demanding that he quit the race at once. In an official statement, the Shiite Grand Leader Ayatollah Ali al-Hassani al-Sistani said, Mr. Nader is not welcome here, and that goes double for Kucinich! Yeah, I told it was referring to Representative Dennis Kucinich, a Democrat of Ohio, who earlier this week announced that he, too, would be running for president of Iraq. Thank you, Andy Borowitz. So, BorowitzReport.com. Yeah, here's the real news on that. The independent presidential campaign of Ralph Nader, according to the Associated Press, has qualified for matching government money, according to the Federal Election Commission. Campaign officials said he has raised more than $850,000 from 7,800 contributions. We don't know how many of those are Republican operatives, but if history is any indication of future, there is significant Republican money in there. The Election Commission matches all contributions of $250 or less up to 18.5 $7 million. And in that context, I got this long email from, and I'm not sure if he just sent it to me or if it went out to a whole bunch of people, but it, you know, just, it was by a guy named Tim. I'm not going to name him. He's in South Carolina, maybe listening on WED, our affiliate there. And Tim, well, let me just share pieces of this with you, because I think that this shares the, or this represents the thinking of a lot of people who consider themselves progressives. And in fact, Tim signs his note at the very end. He says, Tim used to consider himself a centrist until complete control of the government by the radical right showed how morally, ethically, and financially bankrupt the right is. Now he is an uncompromising progressive liberal. Great. Okay, here's what he says. After reading yet another diatribe against Ralph Nader's campaign, I felt I could stay silent no longer. While quite clearly Bush poses an immense threat to the future of this country, targeting him specifically as no more targeting the real threat to this country than invading Iraq was to Al-Qaeda. It only takes reading a few anti-Nader essays and listening to a few Kerry speeches to notice that the neocon ideology is the real threat to this country, as it has not only taken over the Republican Party, but has infiltrated the liberal progressive movement as well, with operatives pretending to be liberals while clearly espousing unliberal viewpoints. Consider the statements that are made by those claiming to be liberals while opposing Nader's campaign. Quote, a vote for Nader is a vote for Bush. Quote, the stakes are too high. Quote, there may not be an America after four more years of Bush. Now, see, Tim believes that when liberals say these things, they're actually either cons in disguise or they have been duped. Duped. He goes on to say, in the face of overwhelming evidence that the pre-war opposition had correctly determined that the premise for going to war in Iraq was false, Kerry has had little to say about his gullibility. Well, Tim, I would tell you that history shows that any presidential candidate who says, oops, I was wrong during a campaign, is toast. You can do it once you're president. Jack Kennedy did, Ronald Reagan did, Dwight Eisenhower did, Harry Truman did. But when you're running for president, it's death. But anyhow, I don't think Tim is really concerned about political realities here. He says, it becomes obvious that the few differences between Kerry and Bush can be attributed more to Bush's differences from the neocon ideology than Kerry's, because Kerry has clearly embraced that ideology. In this regard, I'd have to say, I'm sorry, Tim, I think you're talking about conservative, not neoconservative. The neoconservatives are the ones who believe in American empire. I actually wrote a piece about this on commondreams.org this week, that our choice really this year is between empire or democracy, both for the United States and ultimately for the world. Anyhow, he goes on to say, it's clear that the elitist and overwhelmingly white neocon movement cannot lose this election. The candidate that wins will continue to further their agenda without a strong opposition to this ideology by liberals and progressives through their support of the Nader campaign. The liberal progressive movement will be the first casualty in 2005. No, I'm sorry, Tim. If the entire liberal progressive movement, which is, you know, about as small, frankly, as the hardcore conservative movement, that is maybe somewhere between 10 and 20% of the population, people who really have bothered to educate themselves and really care about these issues and really have a worldview, a vision that is consistent and whole, if that entire group was to commit itself to a Nader candidacy, it would be the death of that group. Just like when the conservatives devoted themselves prior to the election of Ronald Reagan to the candidacies of people like Pat Buchanan and so on, going way back, they just, you know, they went down in flames. Anyhow, he says, it is not the liberals and progressives that have failed this country. It is the Democratic Party, for which it must be dismantled. Tim, you're half right. The Democratic Party in many ways has failed this country. The Republican Party has sold it out, as have many in the Democratic Party. Zell Miller right up at the top of the list.
But that doesn't mean that it should be disbanded. I mean, this is the party that Thomas Jefferson started. It's the oldest political party in the history of the world. It still has tremendous vitality. It still has a lot of people who are very passionate about the values that you care about, Tim. People like Dennis Kucinich, who are still out there within the party. Now, I am not a Democrat, but I'm here to tell you that I think that the future of the progressive movement in the United States, if we want to be successful in bringing about a clear definition, a clear delineation, a clear separation between the con vision of a ruling corporate elite. We saw it, last night it was reported on the news, CEO salaries are up 27% over last year. Again. While the pay of the average worker is going down again. If we want to see the vision of the cons materialize, as it has so often in the past, as it did in the United States in the era from the 1880s to 1910, 1920, as it did in England in the 1700s, 1600s, even the early 1800s, up until 1832, the English Revolution. As it did in much of Europe, as it did in Japan, feudalism, basically. Rule by the rich. This is the conservative vision. They'll kind of shuck and jive. They'll lie about it in their campaign ads for the average person, but read their publications. I mean, it's right there. It's right there. It is just so clear. Our book of the month, for example, at BuzzFlash.com, Tom Hartman's Thinking Person's Book of the Month, is Charles Kelly's Class War in America, How Economic and Political Conservatives Are Exploiting Low and Middle-Income Americans. Let me give you one quote from this book. The book, Kelly's book, by the way, is largely compiled of quotes from conservative sources. Here's a quote from the Wall Street Journal, January 27, 1997, quoted by Charles Kelly in Class War in America, which you can pick up at BuzzFlash.com. And I quote from the Wall Street Journal, "Workers' fear of losing their jobs restrains them from seeking the pay raises that usually crop up when employers have trouble finding people to hire. Even if the economy didn't slow down as he expected," Alan Greenspan told Fed colleagues last summer he saw little danger of a sudden upturn in wages and prices. Mr. Greenspan told Congress at the time, quote, "Because workers are more worried about their own job security and their marketability if forced to change jobs, they are apparently accepting smaller increases in their compensation at any given level of labor market tightness," end quote of Mr. Greenspan, end quote of the Wall Street Journal. Greenspan sees his job as being to maintain worker insecurity. Greenspan, of course, a follower of Ayn Rand, the thinkers behind the thinkers of the con movement. See, I think that what we have to do is we have to infiltrate and take over the Democratic Party, as we have in the past, by the way, as Thomas Jefferson did when he pulled together the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. These are two different groups back in 1797. And pulled them together into the Democratic Republicans. They were, and there was a third one. It was called the Anti-Federalists. Actually, they were all originally kind of called the Anti-Federalists. Pull them together. We need to take them over. He says, Tim goes on to say, "If voting our conscience by supporting Nader causes Bush to win, so be it." I'm sorry, I don't get the logic. He says, "A second term under Bush will be a miserable experience, true, but only by eradicating the cancer of neocon beliefs can this country return to the ideology of true freedom and equality that made us the beacon of hope for the rest of the world." I agree. "That return has to start with the exceeding loud support of Ralph Nader." Wrong. I'm sorry. Ralph Nader's ideas, yes. We need Ralph Nader doing more of what Ralph Nader used to do. All of his extraordinary nonprofit organizations that exposed corporate excesses. He says, "We must identify the enemy within, those that advocate uniting behind someone who does not have interest in liberal ideology." Wait a minute. John Kerry has the most liberal voting record in the Senate. Well, in any case, it is no longer a battle between Democrats and Republicans, as there's no difference in their ideology. Do not compromise, fight harder, says Tim in Newberry, South Carolina. Sorry, Tim, what you don't understand is how our electoral system works. And this always brings me back to this question. Is Ralph Nader a fool or a liar or an egomaniac? Explore that in just a second. This is Tom Harbin, 20 after.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a you'll be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and communities.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
Lancers, bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
In the year 2000, the Democrats won the election. But Bush and the Republicans election. They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election. Kick out.
Yes, welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast. Our number 1-866-889-8894. You know, I should add, and I was running up, sometimes I run up myself against the edge of a break there with a little bit of rant left to go, as happens sometimes with my callers as well. And is Ralph Nader a fool, a liar, or an egomaniac? And I should toss in a fourth option, or a really good man who's kind of gone astray somehow, because his public persona, in my opinion, has become, I mean, the question here now, in terms of his public persona, is, you know, fool or madman or egomaniac. But as I said, I have tremendous respect for him, and as I've told you before, I voted for him three and a half years ago. Ain't going to happen again. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ben in Elgin, Illinois, is on the line. Hey, Ben, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Just to underscore some of the things you were saying in response to that letter, I learned this the hard way, and how parties operate. I'm in Illinois, and if you'll recall, in the 1980s, there was a madman who tries to use the Democratic Party for his own purposes, named Lyndon LaRouche.
Yes. And, well, he's not just in the 1980s. I mean, he's running this year again.
Oh, yes, he is. But it was in the 80s when he succeeded in getting... By putting people into races where there were lightly contested primaries, and by picking people who had very white-bread, centrist, American-sounding names against opponents with long Polish, you know, et cetera, names,
sure.
He managed to squeak out a few primary victories and get some of his, I can only call them fascist, extremists, LaRouche's,
let's call them. I've read a fair amount of his stuff, and I've never really understood his political philosophy. It doesn't seem to be coherent. It seems to be mostly just paranoid. But
that's certainly a good characterization.
Yeah.
In response to which, a lot of Illinois Democrats just refused to run on the same ticket with LaRouche's. And they formed the Illinois Solidarity Party and ran on that ticket. And that was a disaster. And it caused Republican control of many seats in Illinois for quite some time and caused the financial destruction of the Illinois economy. Certainly the Illinois state budget.
Yeah.
Now, what I learned from this is that it does not take more than the willingness to become involved to actually change the entire course of a political party.
Yeah.
I myself am a member of my local party organization. I may be soon to be a committeeman. I think that, and the local party organization here, at least in Kane County, Illinois, has become heavily infiltrated with, Dennis Kucinich supporters and
liberal Democrats.
Yeah, and peace activists and members of the Church of the Brethren, et cetera.
Yeah.
We're taking over here.
That's great. That's
and,
great.
I think that anybody who, if you consider yourself to be a green, if you consider yourself to be, you know, an uber progressive, if you consider yourself to be a socialist, for God's sake, get out there, get involved in the Democratic Party. We're going to take over this thing. The DNC are people we put in place once we run the party.
There you go. You're doing it in Illinois, Ben. Thanks for the call, by the way, and congratulations. God bless you. Jeff is doing it in Denver. We've got a bunch of callers who over the months have said, you know, they're doing this. I think it's wonderful. It's the Tom Hartman program. 29 minutes past the hour. The True People's Radio.
At last. past, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. According to a firm that specializes in outplacement, Challenger Gray and Christmas, planned layoffs increased in May for the second month in a row. 73,368 jobs were cut last month, compared to 72,184 in April. The firm reported that job cuts in the last 4 months averaged at 100,000 per month, well above the average of 51,000 jobs lost per month before the recession.
Republicans in the House of Representatives may introduce legislation to reprivatize airport security and screening services. The Transportation Security Administration, created after the 2001 terrorist attacks on New York and Washington, hired 65,000 people and spent more than $10 billion in the last 2.5 years. Now, House Republicans think the old system of private companies providing airport security would be more efficient and less stressful on the flying public. Some 100 airports around the country plan to invoke a clause in the TSA legislation which would allow them to opt out and reprivatize screening staff later this year, and the TSA itself has already cut loose a quarter of its personnel.
When oilfield services giant Halliburton received a controversial multi-billion dollar no-bid contract to rebuild Iraq, suspicion arose that former Halliburton chief executive and now vice president Dick Cheney tipped the Pentagon in Halliburton's favor. Though Cheney publicly denies any hand in arranging the deal, Time magazine reports there's clear evidence that Cheney did indeed coordinate the contract. Time says a leaked email tipped them off. Vermont Democrat Senator Patrick Leahy is planning congressional hearings on the matter.
Facing a funding crunch of some $70 million next year, the city of Pittsburgh is developing a controversial plan to slash city services, and emergency responders may take the brunt of the cuts. A recently unveiled financial recovery plan would require the closure of 20% of the city's fire stations and would force all remaining firefighters to take a 17% cut in their base pay next year. Police officers would also be hit hard. The city plan calls for the elimination of seniority-based job selection and would force cops to work without pay when called to testify in court.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A report by the Department of Veterans Affairs shows U.S. veterans face an increased risk of becoming homeless. Women who served in the military are 3.6 times more likely to end up living on the street, and men face a 1.4% increased risk. Veterans compose 9% of the U.S. population, but make up a remarkable 33% of the male homeless population.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
In the good old USA, I'm proud to say, we got brand new action, good old fashioned too. And the future so bright,
like welcome back.
Stars in the night, just smiling down on everything we do.
And we'll smile on everything we do if we start moving toward democracy in the United States. Back to what George Washington referred to as liberalism. Yes, George Washington. I hope that America shall always be a beacon of liberality, he said. I hope that over time my nation will become more liberal, he said. Yes, that was George Washington. 1-866-889-8894. I just want to make one final point here about Ralph Nader. The problem is that the founders didn't create a perfect system. They created the first modern democracy in 6,000 years that was a representative democracy. In Greece, you had to have 6,001 people to make any laws, to have a quorum. This was the first representative democracy. And they came up with a system for electing officials that was the first past the post, winner take all. They were very worried about the consequences of it if political parties erupted. James Madison wrote about it at length in Federalist No. 10, and it happened. And most other countries have not made the mistake we made, because most other democracies were created after 1861 when John Stuart Mill came up with the idea of proportional representation, where if 30% of the voters voted for the Greens, then the Greens got 30% of the seats in the House of Representatives or Parliament. But we don't have that here in the United States. So whenever a third-party candidate comes along, they harm the party with whom they're most closely aligned. Uniquely in the United States, Greece, and Australia, and to some extent in Canada. And Australia has fixed this with something very similar to instant runoff voting. We need to do the same here. So I just had to make that point. People who think that voting for Nader is voting for a progressive agenda don't understand how our system works, and they need to read a little bit of American history. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Neil in Dallas is on the line. Hey, Neil, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Two issues I want to cover. One in regards to Ralph Nader.
Mm-hmm.
The impression that I get, that what he reminds me of, correct or not, is Governor Jerry Brown, when he used to run. I realized he never ran to win. He ran to raise issues that other people wouldn't raise.
Well, except
that he thought was important.
Except that Brown ran, A, as a Democrat, and B, he won. He was governor of California for either 4 or 8 years. I think he served 2 terms, didn't he?
I'm not sure about that, but the main point is that he ran to bring up issues.
Yeah, and he is now, and then he ran for mayor of Oakland, California, and he won, and he's been the mayor of Oakland, California for, you know, I don't live in California, I think at least a decade, and he's constantly bringing up issues. So, I think it's possible to do that within the Democratic Party, number one. That would have been my advice to Ralph Nader, you know, join Kucinich and those and continue doing it inside. Or to do it from the outside as he did in the past.
Right. The other thing is, I bought your book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight.
Yes, sir.
And I spent a lot of time in Current Affairs looking for it. I could find none of your books in Current Affairs. It is by accident I found it in New Age.
Yeah, that's when the book first came out 7 years ago. Neil Donald Walsh, who wrote Conversations with God, wrote an afterword for it. And so the bookstores all decided he's a New Age guy. This must be a New Age book. And even though the book is not about New Age stuff, it's about the end of the era of oil, it got stuck over there. So sometimes when you go into bookstores and look for my books, you have to go to the desk and ask them where they are. It's just one of those weird things of the publishing industry. You know, it's unfortunate. But, I'll bet it was must have been a Barnes & Noble.
I think they're the Barnes and Noble, that's correct.
Yeah, they're the ones that still have it there. Borders has it in environmental books. Our local independent bookstore has it in politics. I mean, it depends on bookstore to bookstore. So, anyhow.
In conclusion, Tom, I appreciate you taking the call, and I listen to as much as I can, as much talk radio as I can, and yours is what I think is the best, and you're an inspiration to me, and I can only say keep it up.
Well, thank you, Neil. Neil, how are you listening to us, by the way, down there in Dallas?
Sirius Radio.
Sirius Radio. Wonderful. Okay. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. And thanks for listening on Sirius. And keep doing it. Sirius is offering a great service there. And good programs preceding and following ours as well. In fact, Lynn Samuels comes on right after ours. Another great person with a point of view, with an attitude. And then after that, Ed Schultz, on it goes. With the Marines gone... Let's move along from Ralph Nader here. We've made the point. On the news last night, and on the news the night before last, and on one of the talk shows on Sunday, on 3 different occasions now, in the last 3 days, I have heard Republicans who are basically apologists for George Bush's miserable failure in Iraq, his failure to plan, his failure to understand what he was getting into, I need not go through the list. You either know it or you don't. And anyhow, I have heard 3 different Republican apologists for the Bush administration say, well, you know, we really can do this thing. We really can make Iraq work and give them sovereignty. I mean, look at what happened in Fallujah. We brought in that general, and he went in, and, you know, we were having a terrible battle there. Now we're not having a battle, and Fallujah's peaceful. Sounds good. Doesn't it? I mean, doesn't it? Hey, it worked in Fallujah. We gave the Iraqis sovereignty of a city, and they're not shooting at us anymore. And we're not interfering with them anymore. Well, doesn't that sound like a marvelous thing? Well, first of all, I would say I by and large agree. I think the Iraqis should be able to make the decisions for Iraq, even if that means that they want to have an Islamic Republic, even if that means that they want to return to the 10th century, as long as they're not threatening their neighbors or us. But let me just, as a footnote, because you are going to hear more and more of these cons out there pointing to Fallujah as the example and saying, hey, if we did it in Fallujah, we can do it for the whole country. Let me just bring you up to date. This is not some, you know, weird left-wing site that I got this from. This is the Associated Press story in the paper just a few days ago by Hamza Handawi on the ground in Fallujah. AP reporter. With U.S. Marines gone and central government authority virtually non-existent, Fallujah resembles an Islamic mini-state. Anyone caught selling alcohol is flogged and paraded in the city. Men are encouraged to wear beards, and barbers are warned against giving what they call Western haircuts. Cleric Abdul Qudar al-Awsawi, in Catholicism, they'd be called a priest. What is it? I'm not sure the different categories. I don't think he's a mullah, but anyhow, a cleric. After all the blood, he said, after all the blood that was shed and the lives that were lost, we shall only accept God's law in Fallujah. This offers a glimpse of what a future Iraq might look like as the U.S.-led occupation draws to a close. The cleric further said, we must capitalize on our victory over the Americans and implement Islamic Sharia law. The departure of the Marines under an agreement that ended the three-week siege last month had enabled hardline Islamic leaders to assert their power in this once restive city 30 miles west of Baghdad. Some were active in defending the city against the Marines and have profited by a perception both here and elsewhere in Iraq that the Mujahideen, or Islamic holy warriors, defeated a superpower. Steps taken by the Mujahideen over the past month have gone beyond simply encouraging piety. Sunday, for example, scores of masked... Now, this, keep in mind, this is in Fallujah, the city that on the last 3 days, major news shows, I've heard three Republicans say, this is an example of how, you know, the success that we can have in Iraq, of the wonders of the Bush policy. Sunday, for example, scores of masked mujahideen shouting Allah Akbar, or God is great, paraded four men stripped to their underpants atop the back of a pickup truck that drove through the city. Their backs were bleeding from 80 lashes they had received as punishment for selling alcohol. Which brings me to the issue of, you know, we say we're going to bring democracy to Iraq. Frankly, I'm concerned about democracy in America. I mean, democracy in Iraq would be a fine thing. It was okay with me, frankly, before when Saddam was in a bottle or a box, as Dick Cheney described in February of 2001, right after he took office. I'm sorry, Colin Powell described. He said, you know, Saddam Hussein represents no threat to us. We've got him in a box. He'd been there for 8 years. And, yeah, you know, I have empathy for the Iraqi people. There are 47 nations in the world that are ruled by brutal dictators. We have to hope and pray that every one of them eventually will find democracy. And I believe that the United States, in a multilateral way, through the auspices of the United Nations and other multinational efforts, And the other things that we've done historically, you know, the propaganda efforts, Voice of America and whatnot, that, that eventually we can bring about change in these nations, as we have in so many others. You know, in 1800, there were only three or four democracies in the world. In 1775, you know, you could argue Switzerland had been a democracy for 800 years. It really hadn't been a republic. I mean, it was a bunch of individual cantons. I believe there were 34 of them. The modern Swiss government is a much more recent invention. In 1775, there were functionally no democracies in the world. We did it. Then the French, 10 years later, they had the French Revolution, and which turned out very messy. You know, Robespierre, the terrors, and then Napoleon, you know, came up out of the ashes of that. But out of that came French democracy. And then in 1832, it was the British Revolution, in which the powers, many, many, many more powers were taken away from the king, given to the parliament. And Britain became functionally a democracy in 1832. And by the 1850s, there were maybe 6, 8, 10, 12 countries around the world. Now there are 81 nations that are fully democratic by the definition of the UN Development Committee. Full representative government. And of the 196 nations in the world, only 47, 45, depending on how you count it, that are absolutely not at all democratic, and all the other ones are moving in the direction of democracy more or less, or at least have been up until we invaded Iraq. And time will tell how that's going to play out. But that's a separate thing. But the point that I'm making is that by having a vibrant democracy in the United States, where we respected human rights, where we said, you know, if somebody is arrested, they have the right to a trial by jury, they have the right to face their accusers, they have the right to an attorney. These in the Bill of Rights, the 6th, 7th, and 8th Amendments to the Constitution, they have the right to remain silent, the 5th Amendment to the Constitution. They have the right to privacy in their homes and papers, the 4th Amendment to the Constitution. They have the right to speak freely, to assemble in public, to redress the government for grievances, the 1st Amendment. That by having that kind of a nation, we held that up to the world, and the world said over the last 227 years, wow, we want that too. You know, we're right around the anniversary of Tiananmen Square. I think it's sometime this week. Nobody knows exactly how many people died there. I was in Tiananmen Square. I stood in Tiananmen Square in 1986, walked through it. This was before the student uprising, 3 years before. There were very few cars on the main streets. You'd see a car maybe every 3 or 4 minutes. China had not yet done its thing with Walmart. Sam Walton was still talking about Buy American. There were black bicycles everywhere. I mean, just seas of people on bicycles. And I remember walking through Tiananmen Square with a physician who was in the hospital where I was. I spent a month there in Beijing, November of 1986, studying acupuncture, actually, at the Beijing International Acupuncture Hospital, largest acupuncture teaching hospital in the world. I was curious. I didn't plan on becoming a practitioner. That takes years. I just wanted to learn about it. Ended up, you know, actually going out on the wards and doing it. And that was a whole other funny story. But anyhow, several of the local Chinese shared with me their idea that there were two competing streams of thought in China. One was that of dynasty and power, that the next century would be the Chinese century. And clearly Zhang and the guys who run China are thinking that even today. And that there were also those in China who had watched the example of America, and certainly they understood our foibles and failings, and yet they wanted democracy. They wanted something like what we had. And he was prescient. I mean, it was 3 years later that the revolt in Tiananmen Square happened. And so now, what is the status of democracy in the United States? Let me get into that in just a second. First, let me take this call real quickly. David in New York on the Sirius satellite. David, I'm sorry. We've only got about 30 seconds here. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking the call. Listen, I have a profound concern for the state of democracy in the United States of America. I've been writing and reading actively, and the issue that I see is this. I think that people are focusing on lower-level issues. It's hard to believe that when we're talking about the war in Iraq, when we're talking about corporate greed, eroding civil liberties. But I keep searching for higher-level issues that seem to act as...
David, hang on for just a second. David, just hold on. This is Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a direct TV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Some fishing practices are tearing up the sides of underwater mountains, and a group of scientists is lobbying to protect these deep water environments. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The bottom of the ocean is crisscrossed by volcanoes and steep mountains. Some of these underwater peaks are called seamounts. Scientists say they're teeming with marine creatures that include cold water coral, crabs, and a wide variety of fish. But they also say trawling gear is destroying those seamounts before people even have a chance to study them. Sylvia Earle directs the Global Marine Program of a nonprofit group called Conservation International.
Of the seamounts presently known, a very small number have been explored, just a few more than 200, and every one that's been looked at so far has evidence of fishing pressure already. As soon as they're described and located, there are typically fishing interests there with trawls to extract the commercially valuable species.
Earl says trawlers use metal plates or nets that are dragged across the seafloor. She says that can be extremely destructive because the nets pull up everything in their path.
Trolling, just by its very nature, is like using a bulldozer. It just destroys the entire system.
Earl and more than 1,000 other marine scientists are calling for an immediate ban on trawling in the deep ocean. They presented a statement to a United Nations meeting earlier this year. They're hoping that a UN resolution will be adopted to bring all nations together in protecting seamounts and other fragile ocean areas. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. In our chat room, Coach Glenn tells me that Napoleon had invaded Switzerland. By the way, David, who was making his point, he was on a cell phone. Apparently his cell phone dropped off. So, but, you know, I got your point, David, that you're concerned about the future of democracy in America. Me too, big time. Anyhow, that the Swiss were invaded by Napoleon in 1798. He named it the Helvetic Republic after his defeat in 1815 and a short civil war in 1847. The Radical Party came to power, and Switzerland got its first constitution in 1848. So, again, I guess, you know, I was right in saying in 1775 there were no full democracies in the world. We were the first. And as I said, we didn't do it perfectly. We did damn good. We did a very good job. We did, but it wasn't perfect. So anyhow, with regard to democracy, being a democracy that the world can look at, here we have this remarkable article, this article, letter to the editor, I'm not sure what it was, in the Baltimore Chronicle by Ward Rawley of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He showed up, he says, on Friday morning, 21st of May, 2004, was that about a week ago Friday, during a visit to my city by President George W. Bush, I learned what it means to live in a country when free speech means something entirely different if you don't happen to agree with what your president and or his cabinet have done in your name. On this day, all good pro-Bush citizens in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, got to stand along the curbside of Dalrymple Drive in hopes of catching a glimpse of the most powerful man on earth as he rode by them on a way to speak to the graduates at LSU. I, on the other hand, an old ex-infantry veteran from long ago, was forced to stand 100 feet from Dalrymple Drive in the direct Louisiana summer sun, hidden behind some beautiful giant oak trees growing alongside Dalrymple Drive at Highland Road. Because I was not pro-Bush, I wasn't allowed to do what I planned. At LSU on Friday, May 21st, free speech, as designated by law, was only to be allowed for anti-war citizens that were willing to stand in a roped-off 35-foot square 100 feet from the road. David is back. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, I'm back. Thank you. I'm sorry
okay.
I got dropped on my cell phone.
That's okay. I'm sorry we're up against time again here, but I'll give you 10, 20 seconds.
You know, where I was going with this was what do your listeners believe to be the root cause of all of these problems, what you call the erosion of democracy? I will tell you that, unfortunately, I have a feeling that it is our socioeconomic system.
Oh,
that
yeah,
is gone
absolutely. It is the conservative agenda. It is, and the conservative economic agenda is one of feudalism. And feudalism and democracy cannot coexist. Thanks for the call, David. I got to end the show here or end this hour. But that is why Grover Norquist said he wants to drown government in a bathtub. You know, the spokesman for the conservatives. Anyhow,
you've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
It's the True People's Radio.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. According to a firm that specializes in outplacement, Challenger Gray and Christmas, planned layoffs increased in May for the second month in a row. 73,368 jobs were cut last month, compared to 72,184 in April. The firm reported that job cuts in the last 4 months averaged at 100,000 per month, well above the average of 51,000 jobs lost per month before the recession.
Republicans in the House of Representatives may introduce legislation to reprivatize airport security and screening services. The Transportation Security Administration, created after the 2001 terrorist attacks on New York and Washington, hired 65,000 people and spent more than $10 billion in the last 2.5 years. Now, House Republicans think the old system of private companies providing airport security would be more efficient and less stressful on the flying public. Some 100 airports around the country plan to invoke a clause in the TSA legislation which would allow them to opt out and reprivatize screening staff later this year, and the TSA itself has already cut loose a quarter of its personnel.
When oilfield services giant Halliburton received a controversial multi-billion dollar no-bid contract to rebuild Iraq, suspicion arose that former Halliburton chief executive and now vice president Dick Cheney tipped the Pentagon in Halliburton's favor. Though Cheney publicly denies any hand in arranging the deal, Time magazine reports there's clear evidence that Cheney did indeed coordinate the contract. Time says a leaked email tipped them off. Vermont Democrat Senator Patrick Leahy is planning congressional hearings on the matter.
Facing a funding crunch of some $70 million next year, the city of Pittsburgh is developing a controversial plan to slash city services, and emergency responders may take the brunt of the cuts. A recently unveiled financial recovery plan would require the closure of 20% of the city's fire stations and would force all remaining firefighters to take a 17% cut in their base pay next year. Police officers would also be hit hard. The city plan calls for the elimination of seniority-based job selection and would force cops to work without pay when called to testify in court.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. A report by the Department of Veterans Affairs shows U.S. veterans face an increased risk of becoming homeless. Women who served in the military are 3.6 times more likely to end up living on the street, and men face a 1.4% increased risk. Veterans compose 9% of the U.S. population, but make up a remarkable 33% of the male homeless population.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Americans are properly appalled and nauseated by photos of the torture and humiliation of Iraqi prisoners by U.S. military guards in the Abu Ghraib prison. But this is hardly America's first dance with the vicious devil of prison torture, something our own officials have long tolerated and condoned here at home. It has received scant media attention, but the name of old Lance McCotter recently popped up in conjunction with Abu Ghraib. McCotter is a career prison official, having run military prisons, headed up state prison systems in both Texas and Utah, and now serving as a top executive for a corporation that runs private prisons in New Mexico and elsewhere. The Houston Chronicle recently revealed that McCotter was chosen by Attorney General John Ashcroft to go to Iraq last year to oversee the reopening of Abu Ghraib, which had been Saddam Hussein's notorious torture prison, for use as the main U.S. military prison. McCotter was a curious choice, for everywhere he has gone, the word controversial has been applied to his tenure. In Texas, he lasted only 18 months as commandant, a time in which prison violence made frequent headlines and a federal judge threatened to fine the system $1,000 a day for abuses of prisoners' rights. In Utah, McCotter was forced to resign after a mentally ill inmate was stripped naked and strapped to a chair for 16 hours. The inmate collapsed and died, a death McCotter's administration tried to cover up as a suicide. The state ACLU says that McCotter had a horrifying record on human rights. Ironically, only 3 months before Ashcroft sent McCotter to Iraq, Ashcroft's own Justice Department had issued a damning report on inhumane conditions in the New Mexico prison run by McCotter's corporation. This is Jim Hightower saying, of all the capable prison officials who exist in our land, what kind of message did it send to have put this guy in charge? Ashcroft should be asked, why McCotter?
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Hello from Athens, Greece. Leave it to Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels to create the Wake Up a Winner sweepstakes. Go to choicehotels.com to learn how to enter, and you can win a trip to the big events in Athens. To book, call 800-4-CHOICE or go to choicehotels.com. Choice Hotels. We'll see you there.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Promotion runs June 7th through August 29th, 2004. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit choicehotels.com.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
As David so correctly pointed out in his call at the end of the last hour, and as Teddy Roosevelt pointed out in 1910, the biggest threat to democracy in the United States and around the world is a takeover of governance itself, of the government, of the commons, of the we the people. The most important of the commons, the government itself, a takeover of the government itself by corporate power. And now, having said that, and also, you know, and here's the conservative agenda in a nutshell is cheap labor, cheap labor, cheap labor, cheap labor, corporate profits, corporate profits, corporate profits, corporate profits for a very few. The con agenda does not care about corporate profits for small and medium-sized businesses. This is all about big business. I mean, just look at how the tax laws are organized. Look at who can incorporate in Bermuda and who can't. You just try running a small business out of your home and incorporating in Bermuda, you know, like Halliburton did, or Enron, or Accenture, the company that we just outsourced our homeland security to a foreign company. But I really believe that one of the most powerful ways that we can bring about economic stability in the United States, and of course there's some real big issues here, but you know, we've got a lot of people who are unemployed and becoming unemployed or underemployed as a result of the corporate takeover of our government. And the corporate shills in the Republican and Democratic parties, particularly the Republican Party, which has been entirely taken over, passing law after law after law, purely benefiting probably not more than 1,000 companies. You know, you read the Fortune 500, and by the time you get down to number 500, you're getting down to companies that are relatively small in the grand scheme of things and not all that politically active. It's, and at the most, it's probably 1,000 corporations that are now defining most of the policies of the United States of America. This is not democracy. Anyhow, one way through this is to create your own business. And I got an email from Robert in Grand Rapids. He says, Mr. Hartman, it says on your website that you've started many businesses. Yes, I have. There's 7 of them, in fact. And, you know, one went down in flames and the others have done fairly well. He says, I'm trying to find a job and I would like to start my own business. What advice do you have for me? Well, I wrote a book about this. It was originally a book on how to be a successful entrepreneur. My publisher said, oh, you've got the, and this was right after Time Magazine had done an article about a book I did on attention deficit disorder. He said, you have to make this into an ADD book. And so, you know, because it'll sell more copies. And so I threaded, you know, and the fact that most entrepreneurs actually have ADD, most people who start their own businesses, in my experience, just like most salespeople, qualify for the diagnosis, as it were, which I don't see as a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. And so it's called, the book is called ADHD Secrets of Success. And I just wanted to share with you a couple of just, you know, here's the kernel of the book. You don't need to go out and buy it. I'll just tell you right here. I mean, it's fine if you do, but one of the concepts that I talk about in ADHD Secrets of Success is, number one, create a business, not a job. Create something that can run without you, because eventually, in all probability, you're going to get bored, you're going to want to move on, and you're going to want to sell it. I've done this, as I said, 7 times now in my life, reinvented, as it were, myself, and moved along. And the times that have been the most successful are the times that I've been able to create a business that could run without me, even though in the beginning I was necessary to it. I was its main salesman. I was its main, you know, whatever, its main talent in a particular way. The whole concept of a hunter, now the single exception to that, by the way, I would say, is in those few fields that are extremely ADD-friendly, like talk radio, for example. I mean, this is so stimulating that even for somebody who's as easily bored as I am, to Rush Limbaugh, who I think also qualifies for the diagnosis, he's been doing it for 15 years. It's the kind of thing you just keep on doing because it's fun, right? The radio industry, well, show business in general, is filled with ADD people. But anyhow, number one, create a business, not a job. Number two, there is a difference, a neurological difference, a biological difference between entrepreneurs and bookkeepers, between people who start businesses and people who follow through and take care of all the details. I call them hunters and farmers. And most people who start businesses are the hunter types, and they have great leadership skills but lousy management skills. This is just, you know, the wiring of us. They don't make particularly good managers. Management is a day-to-day bookkeeping kind of job. Leadership is a get out in front of the group, have a vision, pull people behind you, move forward. Wilson Harrell, in fact, probably America's most famous entrepreneur, he wrote a book called For Entrepreneurs Only, which is, I still recommend, one of the best books for anybody who's thinking of starting their own business. Wilson died a couple of years ago of cancer, but his book is still in print. Has 2 chapters in his book about my work on ADD and business. He and I used to do workshops together for small businesses, and we even did them for like IBM. I mean, this was back in the 80s. And Wilson Harrell, he was the founder of Inc. magazine, created the, you know, the Inc. 500 fastest growing business in America. He created the Formula 409 company. He was a compulsive entrepreneur. He started businesses. And Wilson made the comment in the afterword to my book and in a chapter in his book that in order to be a successful entrepreneur, you have to have ADD or ADHD. And, you know, so think of it as an asset. Now, the problem is one of comfort zones. People start businesses and they get all excited and they build this thing up to a certain point of success, and usually that's where it's got 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 employees. and it's starting to make money, and it's starting to break through into success. And at that point, the business needs, now it depends on the industry. I mean, it might, this may happen at the point where you have two people. It may happen at the point where you have 20 people. But at a certain point in this, in the life cycle of a small business, the business needs that detailed manager person running it rather than the visionary entrepreneur. Because this, you are now outside your comfort zone. You are now, if you at that point try to continue to manage your own business, you, in all probability, you'll end up killing it, which is what I did with the first business that I started back when I was 19 years old. An electronics business, TV and stereo repair business in East Lansing, Michigan. We built it up. We had five employees. We were making good money. And I just tried to grow it too fast because I was bored by just having a nice, stable little business and killed it off. And I learned my lesson from that. What I learned was that when you get outside your comfort zone, when you reach the point where you where the business needs management more than leadership, bring in a manager. Some people can learn to be managers. Some entrepreneurs can learn to do it. Very, very few. The vast majority. I once interviewed a guy who was the CEO of one of the largest computer companies in the world. I'm not going to name him because this was an off-the-record part of the interview, but I wrote a cover story about him for one of the computer magazines back in the 80s when I was doing, making part of my income as a writer, you know, writing magazine articles. This was for Computer World, as I recall. And I, you know, this guy was telling me this kind of ADD life story, right? He had invented this computer, and he'd come up with these ideas, and he was always shooting off in new directions and this, that, and the other thing. And I said, what do you attribute your success to in business? And he said, my secretary. And I said, you're kidding. He said, no. He said, actually, in this business, they didn't call them secretaries. They called them executive assistants. He said, no, the most important decision that I make is hiring the person who works with me or for me to make sure that in this case it was a woman, that she keeps me on track, that she keeps me focused, that she attends to the details, and she makes sure that all the other people in the organization are attending to the details so that I don't have to because I don't know how. So in answer to your question, Robert in Grand Rapids, if you want to start a business, you know, have a vision. We'll talk about that some other time. Have a vision. Make it something that people are going to want. That's another topic for another time. But once it gets going, think about bringing in a detail person and giving that person power commensurate with their responsibilities. You can't give people responsibility and not give them an equal amount of power. It doesn't work. I have ended up in virtually every business that I've created working for people that I've brought in. The last one was an ad agency down in Atlanta. It's still there. Chandler McDonald, Stout, Schneiderman, and Poe. They do business as the Newsletter Factory. We hired a brilliant woman after about 4 years. They built the business up. It was doing very well. We hired this brilliant woman as president. And I retired as president and became chairman of the board of directors and basically just got to do, you know, projects and helped out with sales and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And eventually we just sold the business to her. Said, hey, you know, we're out of here. And therefore, here I am in Vermont. So hiring the detail person is not a cost. It's an investment. And that's how you have to think of that. And that is one of the real keys for an entrepreneur, for a small business to be successful, is taking that step. So pardon the digression from democracy. I want to get back to free speech zones and what's happening in the United States and Jose Padilla here, the politics of this. But I thought that was interesting. And it really does have to do with the economic crisis that we're facing in the United States. And I would like to the extent that I can, be of some assistance to those of you who are curious about such issues. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Not a lot. You know, what I find fascinating lately, just in the past week or two, we're finding out that the Bush agenda, short-term anyway, is more at risk from, you know, not we dirty liberals, but from real conservatives like, you know, John McCain and Lincoln Chafee. They're holding up the new budget, mm-hmm. which is just simply more, you know, blue sky spending alongside more tax cuts. And as has been pointed out again and again, Barry Goldwater is doing triple gainers in his grave right now.
Yeah,
right?
Well, see, this is why the Bush administration had to pass out that budget last week, was not supposed to go beyond the Republicans within the administration.
Right.
In which they said, okay, right after the elections, we're going to cut Social Security, we're going to cut Medicare, we're going to cut education, we're going to cut Head Start. You know, and they just listed all these programs that they're going to slash in order to pay for tax cuts for the rich.
And we're not supposed to know about it. But, you know, some real conservatives are actually standing up and saying, you know, wait a second, don't we stand for fiscal discipline anymore? I mean, you know, this is to the point where Dennis Hastert openly suggested that John McCain didn't understand the sacrifices of war.
Yeah.
It gets ridiculous past the point.
It's beyond ridiculous. It's anti-patriotic.
Completely.
John McCain, in my opinion, is a great patriot. I disagree with him on a lot of issues, but he has been consistent throughout his entire life as someone who loves his country and is committed to it. I disagree with him on many issues. Denny Hastert, on the other hand, I view as a weasel opportunist. He does what is going to get him power. He will sleep with the devil. He has a long history of doing this, and so many people within the Republican and the Democratic Party, by the way, have this thing of, you know, it's about the power, stupid. It's not. It's about democracy, stupid. And that's, good point. Thanks, Chris, for the call. I appreciate it. Appreciate your thoughts on it. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. You're in the Truth Arena.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
During the past 3 years, it's true George W. Bush has created more jobs. Unfortunately, they were created in places like China. Bush's policies have encouraged the loss of nearly 3 million jobs. He supported tax breaks to corporations that ship jobs overseas. George W. Bush is taking our country in the wrong direction. It's time to make America work for every American.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. Now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
15, there's still time for you. Time to buy and time to lose. 15.
Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ward Riley showed up on Dalrymple Drive in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to stand in line with all the pro-Bush folks, carrying a sign that said, Veterans for Peace, Not War. An LSU policeman walked up to him and said, sir, you've got to move to a 35-foot fenced-in square 100 feet away, for instance, and I will arrest you if you don't. He says, directly across the street from the free speech zone, about 25 pro-Bush citizens stood along the curb and waited for the president. As I was selected as a spokesman for our group, I asked the LSU police sergeant, why can those people stand along the curb but we can't? And the sarge said, and I quote, because they are pro-Bush. The free speech zones in America. Free speech zones, he says. So let me get this straight. I'll get back into this in just a minute. Kevin in Tampa has been patiently waiting on the line. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Great day today.
Thank you.
I'm very intrigued by your endorsement on your book from Joseph Chilton Pierce. He's a great man.
He's a brilliant man, yeah.
He's one of my favorite quotes comes from him. But anyway, what I called about yesterday in the last hour, you were talking about the Catholic Church.
In the third hour of our program, yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk with you briefly about that because I think I can shed some light. I do understand it. I am Catholic.
Okay, well, let's just reset it real quickly for those people who didn't hear. I was asking, why is it that the Catholic Church, which is outspokenly opposed to the death penalty and the Pope, who has outspokenly come out against the war in Iraq, why is it that all these Catholic bishops who are saying, hey, if you even vote for somebody who votes for or who's in favor of abortion or a woman's right to choose an abortion, you can't take communion. But they never raised the issue. If you can't take communion, if you vote for George W. Bush, who not only is in favor of the death penalty, but put to death 136 people. And, I was just, what's going on? Why is this?
Okay, so part of the problem, Tom, is the same problem we have with George Bush. The media does not report the Catholic Church properly. That was one bishop. There are between 300 and 400 bishops in the United States. Only three have said that politicians shouldn't receive communion, which is less than 1%. Only one, the bishop from Colorado Springs, said that. And my understanding is that a lot of other bishops are very upset with what he did. Cardinal McCarrick, who is the cardinal in Washington, who is generally considered the leading bishop in the country, has written a pastoral letter to his diocese basically saying that the Catholic Church is staying out of the politics of this, that it has stayed out of the politics since the 18th century, and it is continuing to do so.
Are they going to censure this guy in Colorado Springs?
They can't really do that. You see, the way the Catholic Church is set up, each bishop, unless he really does something really... You know, like if you had we had one here in Florida a few years ago. One of the bishops down here, I think in Venice,
yeah,
was one of those bishops who, when he was a regular priest, was
abusing kids.
Abusing kids.
Yeah.
Okay, and the Vatican, you know, came right in right away and got him out immediately. See, unless somebody does something like that, like an impeachable offense, shall we say?
Yeah, well,
he has control over his diet.
So abusing kids is not good, but abusing democracy is just fine.
Well, I'm not saying abusing democracy. What I'm saying is, I think that something should be done to him, but I'm just one member of the Catholic Church and a lay member of that. I don't know how they do that.
Do you get a sense that the Catholic laity is speaking up on this, is concerned about this, or are they just listening to Bill O'Reilly rant?
Also know this, a majority of the bishops have agreed with Cardinal McCarron, and only three have said that the politicians should not receive. And there are, I don't know the exact number, but it's between 300 and 400 bishops.
Okay.
So again, it's a very, very small minority.
Got it. Thanks for the perspective, Kevin. I appreciate it. It's Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
You can't balance a budget by simply cutting.
Cliff Tillman Jr. is executive director of the SEIU Local 415 in Santa Cruz, California, which represents about 4,000 workers in the county. The governor's plan calls for a $7.5 million reduction to Santa Cruz County. For the third straight year, a proposed county budget includes the elimination of jobs, 118 in all. Two-thirds of the cuts come from the county's Health Services Agency and the Human Resources Agency, which run a wide array of programs including adoption, in-home care for seniors, veterans services, and youth employment.
Put people first! No more cuts!
Put people first!
No more cuts!
Karen Delaney works with the Human Care Alliance, a coalition of over 60 nonprofit agencies that provide health and human service in Santa Cruz County. She spearheaded Tuesday's organizing effort.
They're cutting 40 positions from the Health Services Agency and 40 positions from the Human Service Agency, but they're cutting no positions from a lot of the administrative departments.
Can you translate that into what it means for everyday folks? What kind of services are we talking about?
We're talking about people who go in and apply for food stamps or Medi-Cal that they're totally eligible for, having to wait 2 or 3 weeks to get benefits. We're talking about people losing the ability to get the medical services they need because there won't be public health nurses. So, I mean, the impacts are really huge.
Some service providers, like Fiona Hollins, are already on the chopping block.
Our funding's going, and I'm going to be laid off on July 1st.
Fiona is an employee of Community Connection. The program gets some money from the County Mental Health Services Department, but is funded primarily by the California Department of Rehabilitation. Fiona and one other worker provide services to between 5 to 10 mental health clients each per day.
Like keeping one coworker half-time, but usually we're 2 full-time people, and we're getting reduced down to 1 half-time person.
Numerous calls to the office of H.D. Palmer, Deputy Director of External Affairs for the California Department of Finances, seeking comment for this story were not returned. Again, Cliff Tillman.
We need to fund those programs that provide for our community and provide for working people so that we do have a better community. And without that, we will not.
Reporting in Santa Cruz, California, for the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And it's Tom Hartman here, 27 minutes before the hour. Welcome back to our program. Just wrapping this up, for those of you just tuning in, Ward Riley of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, wrote an op-ed piece which was republished in a number of places, including the Baltimore Chronicle, in which he talks about going. Last week, George Bush came down to Louisiana, and he went down to stand in the line, you know, of the people along the parade route. And he was carrying a sign that said, let me get the exact thing here. Anyway, it was basically an anti-war sign. It was pretty innocuous, actually. Yeah, it said, Veterans for Peace, No War. Right? And the guy's a veteran. And the police came up to him and said, you can't stand in this line where the president's car is going to drive by because... And there, other people were holding signs that said, you know, Bush Cheney 04, reelect Bush in 04, you know, George Bush my hero, George talks to Jesus, whatever they were saying. But his sign said, Veterans for Peace, No War. And so a police officer came up to him and said, you've got to go stand in the free speech zone, which was, you know, down the street around the corner, 100 feet away, a 35-foot square enclosed cage into which the police were herding what they call protesters. And after he tells this story, he says, so let me get this straight, and also let me present this to you, and you decide what's wrong with this picture. If you are pro-Bush, you need no permit to stand along the edge of the road. No security is necessary if you decide that you want to get as close to the president as you can. The police checked none of them, this being the pro-Bush people who lined the pathway, asking them for no permits, and allowed those people to line the street within only inches of where the president's car would be riding. So if I were a terrorist or an assassin trying to hit our president, all I would need to do in order to get only inches away from him would have been to say nothing, get no permit, carry no sign. I just don't get it. Do you get it? Says Ward Riley. And then he goes on to say, did I mention that a lot of men and women have died in war thinking that their sacrifice would guarantee that something like this would never happen to me or you in the United States of America? Maybe if our war president had shown up when it was his turn to fight in a war, this wouldn't have happened to us. When he did show up somewhere, like here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana on May 21st, 2004. Nice of you to show up, George. At least it was nice if you were a pro-Bush, non-sign-carrying pro-war type. Please don't come back here. You could have been a world hero instead of being a world criminal, at least in my eyes. Could have been, but never more. The infantry, Ward Riley wraps up, wasn't too bad for me. I'm still here. At least I can still write about free speech, even if I can't practice it. In Boston, a friend of mine in Boston just sent an email. They're starting to crack down on protesters and arrest folks, and apparently in anticipation of the Democratic National Convention there. Secret Service, Homeland Security, FBI are coordinating these things. This is exactly what was done during the RNC in 2000. And most recently, within the last few days, a performance artist named Joe Privatera imitated the famous photo of the Iraqi prisoner by standing in a milk crate with a black hood over his head and wires on his hand in front of the military recruitment center in Temple Place in downtown Boston. Police told him to leave. He refused. So they arrested him and charged him with a felony, making a false bomb threat and using a hoax device. Tried to charge him $10,000 bail. They made up the charge to harass him, so writes this correspondent. His lawyer got him out without bail, with lawyers, court dates, etc., which will most likely last through the DNC. So the Democrats apparently are concerned about protests, too. I would hope that Kerry would speak up about that kind of thing. I would hope so.
But here in the area, in the world of civil liberties, I mean, this what did the founders of this nation die for? What did the men who fought and women in many cases who fought and died and or died in so many of our wars, believing that they were representing a noble cause? What was the ideal? What is the pledge that members of the House of Representatives, the United States Senate, and the United States President take? Is it to defend the United States of America? Oddly, no. Instead, the pledge that the founders thought was more important was that our elected officials pledge an oath to defend an idea, not the borders of our nation, not even the people in our nation, but an idea. The oath of office requires the president and members of the House and Senate to uphold, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. The Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the United States has some very specific things to say. For example, Amendment number 1, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free speech thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. George Bush has violated his oath of office. The oath of office does not require that the president tell the truth if confronted about having an extramarital affair. The oath of office does require that the president uphold the amendment, the United States Constitution. Congress shall make no law abridging the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for the redress of grievances. Other parts of the Constitution that the President, Vice President, and Congress swore to defend, again, this being more important in the eyes of the founders than swearing to defend the nation itself. The Fourth Amendment, the right of people to be secure in their homes, persons, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. The Fifth Amendment, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentation or indictment by a grand jury, except in cases, you know, arising in the militia, goes a blah, plus, you know, double jeopardy, plus no man shall be compelled to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. The Fifth Amendment of the United States. No person in the United States shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now, does putting somebody in prison without charges, without access to a lawyer, without even a charge, I mean, due process of law requires at least a charge, be a violation of that oath of office that this president took? The Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution: in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial, to be confronted by the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. You have the right to a lawyer. It didn't come out of nowhere. It didn't come from the Supreme Court's Miranda decision. It comes from the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution, which the President, the Vice President, and every member of the Senate and House of Representatives have sworn to uphold.
the Seventh Amendment. The right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. In other words, you have the right to a trial by jury, and if a jury of your peers acquits you, that's it. End of discussion. The Eighth Amendment, bails, fines, and punishments. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Now, let's look at Mr. Ashcroft's offensive. As the Center for American Progress notes, yesterday the Justice Department tried to quell the growing outrage about the treatment of U.S. citizen Jose Padilla by cynically attempting to undermine public confidence in the American justice system. Deputy Attorney General James Comey told the media yesterday that if the government would have given Padilla the rights to which he is entitled as a U.S. citizen under the United States Constitution, oh my God, if we gave him his rights under the Constitution, he would, quote, likely have ended up a free man, end quote. Say what? I mean, if they have any evidence this guy's really a bad guy, he's not going to end up as a free man. Comey based that assertion on a series of unproven allegations that were gleaned from 2 years of interrogating Padilla without the presence of an attorney. Here's this guy, an American citizen, held by this administration under order of the president, the executive branch, in violation of the United States Constitution. And it's just, not only that, Ashcroft is trying to improperly influence the Supreme Court. Right? The LA Times reports that this press conference, quote, triggered concern that the Justice Department was trying to influence the case before the Supreme Court over Padilla's detention. Donald G. Remkoff, a lawyer who has represented the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, said the new allegations against Mr. Padilla could have an inevitable spillover and unduly influencing the high court. See, the justices, the nine justices of the Supreme Court, they all read newspapers, they watch CNN, and they're right now trying to decide whether Jose Padilla should or should not have access to rights under the Constitution. And then, if this guy ends up before a jury, Ashcroft is trying to taint the jury pool. Comey acknowledged that none of the information yesterday released would be admissible in court. Should the government decide to prosecute Padilla, Ashcroft has tainted his potential jury pool by presenting the public with inadmissible evidence against him that would be highly prejudicial. I mean, this is wrong. This is even a violation of the Geneva Conventions. But in my mind, far more important, it's a violation of the United States Constitution. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to call in. Lorna in Grand Rapids, Michigan, is on the line. Hey, Lorna, welcome to the program.
Hi, Freedom Fighter.
Freedom Fighter, good. Good on you.
Hey, you know what? I heard one sentence on the news about 2 weeks ago. I've been trying to get up nerve to call in about it, and I haven't heard a word about it since. It's that when Cheney went to China in April 20th, he sold China 32 billion watt reactors, enough to split the atom. And I just wonder, I don't know anything about nuclear weapons, not a thing. But this sounded so, and it was Westinghouse that was supposed to do the work.
Yeah, they actually went along with him.
Oh.
Corporate representatives went along with Dick Cheney to China, and 32 nuclear reactors were sold to China, and they are reactors of a type that can produce waste from which plutonium can be extracted to make not just plain old generic atomic bombs, but the big ones, the plutonium bombs.
Yeah.
And
was this supposed to be the balance of power or something?
Well, I mean, beyond that, what happened to the idea of we're going to support nations in the world that are democracies rather than dictatorships? I mean, China is just cracked. They've just fired. Just last week, they just fired in Hong Kong, where they had said, you know, when we take over Hong Kong, we're going to let things just stay. They just fired the last radio talk show host who dared to speak out against the government. They're shutting down newspapers. They're putting people in prison. They've had mass arrests here this last week in anticipation of protests in Tiananmen Square because the anniversary of the massacre in Tiananmen Square is coming up, and these are our buddies. Right?
Why are we helping them?
Well, we're helping them because the corporations who are going to make millions and millions, maybe billions of dollars from this, are huge donors to Bush and Cheney. That's the bottom line. It's that corporations have taken over our government, and to heck with our principles, set them aside. It's not about democracy anymore. It's about money, and that's how this administration is run. And I know that sounds like a harsh indictment, but I defy any listener out there. Please, some conservative Republican, call me up and point out how I am wrong. I had Congressman Tom Tancredo on the program, you know, Republican from Colorado, I believe he is, a couple of months ago, and I said, Congressman, please tell me one piece of legislation in the last 3 years that was proposed and passed through Congress by the Bush administration and the Republican Party that had as its primary benefit either individual human beings or democracy instead of corporations.
Boy.
And he could not come up with one. Not one. And we've been having a running contest here ever since. And if anybody calls and can answer that question, I'll give them a free copy of We the People, my new book. Lorna, thanks so much for the call. Great to hear from you. Thanks for getting up your courage to call. And please feel free to call in again.
Took a lot.
Yeah, well, it's great to hear from you.
And the torpedoes, full speed ahead.
There you go. And keep on listening. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We'll be right back.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. Add $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate
formula. You'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift, guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Development brings better health and higher living standards to people in poor countries, but the transition can be violent. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Most countries follow a similar pattern in development, moving from poor rural societies to wealthier industrial economies. People's incomes and life expectancy rise, and birth rates and infant mortality go down. Experts call this a demographic transition. But these stages are not always smooth, according to Robert Engelman of Population Action International. He says countries hit a rough spot when death rates fall, but birth rates remain high.
Typically, death rates have dropped considerably because of better sanitation and better agriculture, nutrition, vaccination, that sort of thing. But birth rates haven't always come down. When you have fairly low death rates and fairly high birth rates, you have a lot of young people.
Engelman says that can lead to a youth bulge. Lots of people between ages 15 and 29. He says these countries are more prone to social disorder.
We found a very close correlation with the demographic transition. That is, countries that were earlier in this transition that still had a long way to go before their birth rates really came down to what we experienced, say, in the United States or in Europe. When countries were still way above that, they tended to have a lot more conflict.
Engelman says the best way to address this imbalance is through comprehensive health programs.
We believe it's really a security intervention to actually work on lowering death rates through helping prevent preventable infectious disease, and also working to encourage access to reproductive health care and family planning so that the overall trend toward lower birth rates can continue.
Engelman says health care and family planning can help developing countries through the most dangerous stages of the transition to modern societies. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 4 minutes before the top of the hour. The Washington Post had... This is quite remarkable. Last Monday, I just have to share this story straight up with you, by Dana Milbank and Jim Van de Hy, The Washington Post, May 31st. Last Monday in Little Rock, Vice President Cheney said Democratic presidential candidate John F. Kerry, quote, has questioned whether the war on terror is really a war at all, end quote, and said the senator from Massachusetts, quote, promised to repeal most of the Bush tax cuts within his first 100 days in office, end quote. On Tuesday, President Bush's campaign began an ad saying Kerry would scrap wiretaps that are needed to hunt terrorists. The same day, the Bush campaign charged in a memo sent to reporters and through surrogates that Kerry wants to raise the gasoline tax by 50 cents. On Wednesday and Thursday, as Kerry campaigned in Seattle, he was greeted by another Bush ad alleging that Kerry now opposes education changes that he supported in 2001. The charges, the Washington Post notes, were all tough, serious, and wrong. They're lies! Kerry did not question the war on terrorism, says the Washington Post. You know, I will. I'll raise my hand and say, you know, but that's a whole, you know, a whole other rant. John Kerry hasn't questioned the war on terrorism. He has proposed repealing the tax cuts only for those earning more than $200,000. He supports the wiretaps in cases of terrorism. He has not endorsed a 50-cent gasoline tax increase in 10 years, and even then didn't do it legislatively. It was an off-the-cuff comment he made in a magazine interview. You know, something like, well, this might be something we, 10 years ago, this might be something that we might want to consider as a way to wean our way off the dependence on foreign oil. And he continues to support the education changes albeit with modifications. All of these Bush ads this week, the two statements by the vice president, these two speech statements, and these three Bush campaigns, plus the memo that was sent out to reporters, all lies, L-I-E-S, lies. The assault on Kerry, from the Washington Post, the assault on Kerry is multi-tiered. It involves television ads, news releases, websites and email, and statements by Bush spokesmen and surrogates, all coordinated to drive home the message that Kerry has equivocated and flip-flopped on Iraq, support for the military, taxes, education, and other matters. It's like out of one side of their mouth, they say, the guy doesn't have any position to stand on. He's all over the map. And on the other side of their mouth, they say, he has the most consistently liberal voting record in Congress. Which is it, guys? It's the Tom Hartman radio program. You're in the truth arena. Keeping it straight here for you. Well, straight and left? I don't know. You know what I mean.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
According to a firm that specializes in outplacement, Challenger Gray and Christmas, planned layoffs increased in May for the second month in a row. 73,368 jobs were cut last month, compared to 72,184 in April. The firm reported that job cuts in the last 4 months averaged at 100,000 per month, well above the average of 51,000 jobs lost per month before the recession.
Republicans in the House of Representatives may introduce legislation to reprivatize airport security and screening services. The Transportation Security Administration, created after the 2001 terrorist attacks on New York and Washington, hired 65,000 people and spent more than $10 billion in the last 2.5 years. Now, House Republicans think the old system of private companies providing airport security would be more efficient and less stressful on the flying public. Some 100 airports around the country plan to invoke a clause in the TSA legislation which would allow them to opt out and reprivatize screening staff later this year, and the TSA itself has already cut loose a quarter of its personnel.
When oilfield services giant Halliburton received a controversial multi-billion-dollar no-bid contract to rebuild Iraq, suspicion arose that former Halliburton chief executive and now vice president Dick Cheney tipped the Pentagon in Halliburton's favor. Though Cheney publicly denies any hand in arranging the deal, Time magazine reports there's clear evidence that Cheney did indeed coordinate the contract. Time says a leaked email tipped them off. Vermont Democrat Senator Patrick Leahy is planning congressional hearings on the matter.
Facing a funding crunch of some $70 million next year, the city of Pittsburgh is developing a controversial plan to slash city services, and emergency responders may take the brunt of the cuts. A recently unveiled financial recovery plan would require the closure of 20% of the city's fire stations and would force all remaining firefighters to take a 17% cut in their base pay next year. Police officers would also be hit hard. The city plan calls for the elimination of seniority-based job selection and would force cops to work without pay when called to testify in court.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A report by the Department of Veterans Affairs shows U.S. veterans face an increased risk of becoming homeless. Women who served in the military are 3.6 times more likely to end up living on the street, and men face a 1.4% increased risk. Veterans compose 9% of the U.S. population, but make up a remarkable 33% of the male homeless population.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
My, my. The highly touted benefits of globalizing America's high-tech jobs have just gotten a political comeuppance. Not in our country, not yet, but in a country that has been hailed by Washington, Wall Street, and the media as one of the chief beneficiaries of the outsourcing of our middle-class jobs, India. Endless articles have been written about the sudden economic boom and the gleaming new high-tech centers of southern India. Has the CEOs of Dell, Microsoft, Intel, and the rest fattened their bottom lines by replacing American programmers and engineers with much cheaper ones in India, we were told that such self-serving outsourcing was really a morally responsible move, for it was generating a newly affluent upper middle class over there, a golden example of the boundless glories of corporate globalization. But what they didn't tell us is that this so-called boom went only an inch deep, not touching the vast majority of this nation's 1 billion people, much less lifting them out of grinding poverty and drudgery. While the government launched a PR campaign it called India Shining to tout the new high-tech economy, two-thirds of the people still depend on agriculture to eke out a living. 300 million Indians still live on less than a dollar a day, and thousands of villages have no schools, hospitals, or clean water. Indeed, the lives of the majority have worsened, for the government slashed public services, privatized agencies, cut wages, and eliminated millions of jobs in an effort to attract foreign capital and offer subsidies to high-tech moguls. But now, the people have had their say on India Shining. In last month's elections, by an overwhelming majority, they dumped the prime minister, his ruling party, and the state officials who had engineered the sellout to global corporate powers. This is Jim Hightower saying, the popular rebellion against clueless corporate plutocrats and politicians has truly gone global, and America is ripe for it, too.
Hello from Athens, Greece, folks. Now, if you're a big sports fan like me, this is the place to be. They've got them all. Take fencing. My sword of choice is always the foil over the saber in F.A. You've got to see it. That's why Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels have created the Wake Up a Winner sweepstakes. You could win a trip to the big events in Athens. To enter, visit choicehotels.com, or every time you stay at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels this summer, you'll get a game piece with a chance to win hundreds of prizes and discounts off your next stay. Wake up a winner. To book, call 800-4-CHOICE or go to choicehotels.com. Well, I'm off to rhythmic gymnastics, where it always comes down to who nails the tightest ribbon snake. Choice Hotels. We'll see you there.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Promotion runs June 7th through August 29th, 2004. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit choicehotels.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the top of the hour, the third hour of our program. Our number, 1-866-889-8894. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming around the planet. RadioPower.org, Cable Radio Network, White Rose Society Archives, and, of course, on our radio stations, our radio station friends and partners from coast to coast. A few interesting things. I just don't know. You know, the New York Times reports the Department of Homeland Security on Tuesday named Accenture as the prime contractor for a multi-billion-dollar project focused on border security. Accenture received the contract, notes the Center for American Progress, even though it recently moved its headquarters to Bermuda to avoid paying federal taxes. 2 years ago, now, this is the big new thing to do, right? It's like, who cares about the commons? Yes, we want an educated workforce, but we don't want to pay taxes that are going to go to public schools. Yes, we want our employees to be able to use the roads and the trucks that ship our products around to be able to use the public highways, but no, we don't want to pay taxes for that. Yes, we want our executives to fly around in public airspace, often on their private jets, but no, we don't want to pay taxes to help support the air traffic control system. Yes, we would like our employees to have safe food and water and air for their families, but no, we don't want to pay taxes to support that. Yes, we want to make money in America. We want to make use of the court system. We want to make use of the monetary system. We want to make use of the banking system, but no, we don't want to pay taxes for any of that. This fad, Dick Cheney did this under his rule at Halliburton. Now Accenture has done it, and they just received a contract worth multiple billions of dollars. Now, first of all, I don't think we should be outsourcing this stuff. I think, you know, we the people should be protecting ourselves. And secondly, if we are going to outsource it, it shouldn't be to a traitor corporation, a Benedict Arnold corporation, as John Kerry was calling them there for a while, that has reincorporated in Bermuda to avoid paying their share of our taxes. You know, in 1940s, the early 1950s, almost half of federal taxes paid in the United States were paid by corporations. Under Ronald Reagan, it went down to around 30%. It's now down to around 7%. You and I are paying the rest. 2 years ago, when Congress considered legislation to create the Department of Homeland Security, Representative Rosa DeLauro, is a congresswoman from Connecticut, Democrat from Connecticut, introduced legislation that if the government is going to spend money on Homeland Security, that money better go to a corporation that is incorporated in the United States and pays taxes in the United States and is responsible to the Attorney General of the state in which it is incorporated and to the people of the United States. The amendment actually passed Congress. Everybody said, hey, that makes a lot of sense. And then Accenture, according to the Center for American Progress, this company that just got this multi-billion dollar contract, this is the thing, you know, spend a few million bucks on politicians, make a few billion. Politicians are probably the cheapest investments out there. Accenture used its considerable clout and campaign contributions to have the measures stripped out of the final bill. Amazing, eh? 1-866-889-8894. Let's take a few calls here. Chuck in New Mexico is on first. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. I live in New Mexico, and Roswell's right down the road, but I'm not a conspiracy theorist. But I wanted to mention something to you. You strike me as extremely super well-educated and very, very informed man. There's a book that I actually saw in a library of a friend a few years ago called The Entrancing of America. And I was sitting there while I was staying with him reading this thing. And it's got some of the most amazing stuff from like 10 years ago with Dick Cheney.
Really?
And I have been trying to find this book, and I think it's been heavily suppressed. Again, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, maybe just out of print.
Well,
I can't find the darn thing. But it was a lot about the creation of, professional within the CIA prostitution rings for the extraction of information, and Cheney's mentioned by name.
Interesting. And, I'll have to look around for it.
You probably have better access to information than I do, but I just wanted to pass that your way because I got to tell you, it was an intense and startling book.
Well, I've made a note of it. The Transient of America. And after I get off the air, I'll be looking around for it,
yeah,
Chuck.
The entrancing, as in trance.
Right. Yeah.
It sounds like hypnosis.
Sounds like it might be like what happened to Barbara Honegger. Barbara Honegger wrote a book called October Surprise. She used to work in the Reagan-Bush White House. And mm-hmm. it was about and her experience and her research. I mean, she was there when it happened, of before the campaign when Reagan was running against Jimmy Carter, George Bush going over to Paris and cutting a deal with the Iranians to hold the hostages so that Carter would end up looking like an impotent fool and Bush would win, and Reagan would win the election. And then the deal, of course, was that after that the hostages would be released after Reagan became president. And you know, as if to kind of make their point, the hostages were literally released as Reagan was being sworn in. And then, of course, we had to give them these missiles. And this became the Iran-Contra affair. Well, she wrote this book called October Surprise. And I was going through an airport one day, and it was in the books, you know, it was there. I picked it up, and I bought it. And about 3 weeks, and I read it, and I just boggled my mind. The last chapter, in fact, is called A Kindler, Gentler America. And it talks about how Allie North had bragged that he was a hitman for the Bush administration. And then it goes through and lists 34 murders. And, you know, not attributing them specifically to Allie North, but to this, including William Casey. And, you know, the former director of the CIA. And it just fascinating book. And I started looking around for it. It has vanished. It had just completely vanished. It had not only gone out of print, but the company that published it had been bought up and gone out of business. And, you know.
Well, I got to tell you, Tom, if I hadn't personally read this book, I wouldn't have believed it. Because, you know, I don't believe in conspiracy theories. I think that the government's too incompetent to hold a conspiracy. But this thing was it's horrible.
Yeah. Well, I'll take a look for it. Thanks a lot, Chuck. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Thanks. 15 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Brian in New Jersey's on the line. Hey, Brian, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to give a quick shout-out to the chat room and invite everybody to come into the chat room from the Internet. But what I really was calling about, we have this rising interest rate now. We're outsourcing jobs. CEOs are getting paid 500 times more than their lowest-paid employee. Where does it come to the point where another depression hits? And when a depression does hit, what exactly does that mean? I wasn't around back in the 20s, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, depressions happen in different ways for different reasons. The one that happened in the 1920s was a true depression where money actually became scarcer and worth more in the United States. So in other words, a loaf of bread in 1929 might have cost a dollar. It might have only cost 20 cents by 1933. The problem was that to get that 20 cents was a whole lot harder because 35% of the nation was unemployed.
Right.
And so it was a true deflationary scenario where money actually became worth more. There was less money chasing goods and services. There, at the same time, what happened in Germany was after World War I, the Treaty of Versailles was convened in Versailles, France, and the conclusion of the victorious nations was that these nasty Germans, and, you know, let's give them the due of the victors. I mean, the Germans were nasty. They started, some would say that they started World War I. They certainly participated in it, let's say, in ways that were disreputable.
Okay.
That Germany had to pay war reparations to the various countries that they had ended up invading and harming. Right. And basically by treaty, and Germany had to participate in this in order, for the war to officially be over. Basically by treaty, Germany suddenly had what in today's dollars would be a debt worth hundreds of billions, perhaps a trillion or more dollars.
Oh, like us?
Yeah, strangest thing. And so the way the Germans got out of paying back the debt, or the way that they actually just, paid back the debt, was they just turned up the printing presses and started printing Deutschmarks, more and more and more of them. And so you had the opposite of what was going on in the United States, where we had less currency and, very low interest rates and very little inflation and very high unemployment. In Germany, they had so much currency that people were literally being paid at noon and at the end of the day, and they'd run home during their lunch hour and buy things because things were increasing in price 5-10%, per afternoon.
Right, isn't that just like fake money? They're just printing nothing.
Yeah, yeah, and that's called hyperinflation.
Okay.
And that kind of a depression happens when a government is faced with a debt that the only way it can pay off, or the only way it's willing to pay off. I mean, the Germans really had two choices. They could have increased domestic taxes dramatically and subjected their people to probably a half a dozen or a dozen years of something like the depression that the United States was facing. By sucking the national resources out and giving them back to the nations that they had harmed.
Right.
In our case, we're sucking our national resources out and giving them to a few very wealthy families in the United States. And many of our resources, of course, we're giving to China and India and other countries through all this outsourcing stuff. But anyhow, they could have done that, which is what all the nations who signed the Treaty of Versailles expected. They all expected that Germany would just, you know, bite the bullet, decrease their standard of living, put up with it, you know, sell off some of their national assets, and you know, nobody expected the hyperinflation. And, of course, the hyperinflation was so incredibly destructive in Germany, it reached the point where literally a wheelbarrow basket full of Deutschmarks was necessary to buy a loaf of bread. You can buy, you know, postage stamps from that era. When I was a kid, I collected stamps, and you know, I have some 1 million mark, 3 million mark, 5 million mark postage stamps, you know, and the Deutschmark, when it vanished, you know, when it was replaced by the euro recently, was worth just a little less than a dollar, you know, it was worth about 80 cents. So, you know, a million marks would have been a lot. In fact, I always used to wonder when I was a kid, I got this stamp, it's worth a million marks, and the mark right now is worth about 80 cents, and you know, but unfortunately, it didn't translate. But the point is that's what the Germans did, and there is some concern, and in fact, we're going to talk about it tomorrow on this program. There is some concern that the United States government, that the Bush administration specifically, may be planning, since they've run up this enormous debt, they may be planning to try to inflate their way out of it. And if they do, it could be a disaster of worldwide proportions.
Yeah, that would cause worldwide disaster because they run off of our currency almost, OPEC, correct?
Well, oil is denominated in dollars. And of course, one of the first effects probably would be that the rest of the world would start denominating oil in euros instead of dollars. But it would wreck us. It would wreck us. And we're going to have to do one of two things. I mean, we're faced with the same choice as Germany was after the Treaty of Versailles. We're going to have to hunker down or we're going to have to inflate our currency. It's going to be a tough one. Brian, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Tom Hartman here with you, and we'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again.
Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
When I think about getting older, it's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And now Washington, D.C., a funny little town. The further you look into it, the further things stick out. You ought to be ashamed. You ought to be destroyed. I'll chop you into little bits and feed you to my dogs.
Welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And some of the world's most interesting bumper music occasionally pops up. 1-866-889-8894, our number. I've got a Dana Rohrabacher alert for you and also some interesting new economic statistics information. And just this coolest thing that I got, this email that I got from former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie, now chairman of the Republican National Committee, I want to share with you. However, first, let's go to Mike in Atlanta. Hey, Mike, thanks for calling 1-866-889-8894. What's up?
Hey, Tom, I love your show. I listen just about every day, so I dance to your theme when it comes on.
Well, thank you.
I enjoy it so much. I have a question and a comment, if that's, I don't know if I'll be able to squeeze them in, but sure. I have a question. I've been studying up on the Patriot Act, and as you know, it's a really difficult read.
Yeah.
It's pretty impossible to read unless you have the legislation that it modifies next to it, so you can't, it's really hard to look into, but I wondered if you knew the answer to this. Is there anything in the Patriot Act which grants the president emergency powers to suspend an election if there's some kind of a national emergency?
I don't know if it's in the Patriot Act, but I know that there was an executive order issued by Richard Nixon just prior to Watergate blowing up in his face, which is still in effect, which grants the executive office, grants the president that power. And the Constitution does give the president certain emergency powers. So I'm not sure that they even needed the Patriot Act to do that. Frankly, I don't know the answer.
Okay. All right. Well, good answer then. And then I had a comment about the previous caller about the questions about the economy and so forth, the depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to say that I think that if it's going to happen anyway, I mean, I think it's going to, eventually it's going to have to happen because or some kind of economic crisis because of, well, I mean, some of the things you've said about the oil prices going up. And I just read a book called Hubbard's Peak, which, you know, pretty much sets the case that it's inevitable. I mean, the prices are just simply going to keep going up. Some things over the short term may lower it slightly, but ultimately it's going to go up, up, and up, and up.
Yeah.
And I think the obvious thing is that, you know, the first industry that will be hit by that is the airline industry.
Yeah, and they already are. They're actually
skirting the
While the oil industry is making record profits, by the way.
Right. Exactly. And that's what I think. If the Iraq situation has an agenda, I think it's basically so that they will be the kingpins on top of the world's oil supply when this happens. Because whoever ends up with the Saudis and whoever ends up with Iraq's oil is probably going to be the world's first trillionaires.
Well, it even goes beyond that. Whatever nation or collection of nations controls the Middle East and the oil supplies of the Middle East, particularly as we move into the next 20 years on the other side of Hubbard's Peak, will control the world. I mean, there's just, you know, and the Chinese have been talking about this for a couple of years.
And then when you couple that with the economic collapse that may happen from, you know, industries simply not being able to support themselves because they can't afford the oil for their business, and you've really got power.
Yeah, or at least will happen here in the United States. A lot of the northern European countries have been aggressively moving toward alternative energy sources and reducing their dependence on oil. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but even them, even with their switchovers, I don't think they're quite prepared for it either.
No,
so.
it's a train wreck coming. It's a train wreck that Jimmy Carter tried to avoid and warned us about. And, you know, Ronald Reagan coming in with oil company money, his first official act of office was to take the solar collectors off the White House roof. And that was the last we heard. You know, and then he undid all the rules, all the laws and the tax breaks to encourage solar energy. And that was the end of that. So anyhow, thanks for raising the issue, Mike. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Tom Hartman with you. 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. According to a firm that specializes in outplacement, Challenger Gray and Christmas, planned layoffs increased in May for the second month in a row. 73,368 jobs were cut last month compared to 72,184 in April. The firm reported that job cuts in the last 4 months averaged at 100,000 per month, well above the average of 51,000 jobs lost per month before the recession.
Republicans in the House of Representatives may introduce legislation to reprivatize airport security and screening services. The Transportation Security Administration, created after the 2001 terrorist attacks on New York and Washington, hired 65,000 people and spent more than $10 billion in the last 2.5 years. Now, House Republicans think the old system of private companies providing airport security would be more efficient and less stressful on the flying public. Some 100 airports around the country plan to invoke a clause in the TSA legislation which would allow them to opt out and reprivatize screening staff later this year, and the TSA itself has already cut loose a quarter of its personnel.
When oilfield services giant Halliburton received a controversial multi-billion dollar no-bid contract to rebuild Iraq, suspicion arose that former Halliburton chief executive and now vice president Dick Cheney tipped the Pentagon in Halliburton's favor. Though Cheney publicly denies any hand in arranging the deal, Time magazine reports there's clear evidence that Cheney did indeed coordinate the contract. Time says a leaked email tipped them off, Vermont Democrat Senator Patrick Leahy is planning congressional hearings on the matter.
Facing a funding crunch of some $70 million next year, the city of Pittsburgh is developing a controversial plan to slash city services, and emergency responders may take the brunt of the cuts. A recently unveiled financial recovery plan would require the closure of 20% of the city's fire stations and would force all remaining firefighters to take a 17% cut in their base pay next year. Police officers would also be hit hard. The city plan calls for the elimination of seniority-based job selection and would force cops to work without pay when called to testify in court.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A report by the Department of Veterans Affairs shows U.S. veterans face an increased risk of becoming homeless. Women who served in the military are 3.6 times more likely to end up living on the street, and men face a 1.4% increased risk. Veterans compose 9% of the U.S. population, but make up a remarkable 33% of the male homeless population.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Ouch. 26 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It sounded a little bit like Dr. John there for a moment. I didn't quite know where that was going. The economy, an economy alert for you. Well, let's go to the phones first. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to be on. And then I've got Jonathan in Palm Desert is on the air. Hey, Jonathan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Are you aware of a website called The Stupid Git Guide to Politics?
The Stupid Guys?
Stupid Git, G-I-T.
Right. No, I'm not.
Okay. It's actually a pretty good source of information. They've had a couple of interesting stories that haven't gotten much press, that President Bush is trying to privatize the Freedom of Information Act, or at least obscure it even further.
This administration, I mean, that's been well documented that during the Clinton administration, there was progressively more and more. I mean, they were down to 6 or 8 million documents being classified per year at the end of the Clinton administration from, you know, like 8 or 10 at the beginning or something like that. It was a measurable drop, not a huge dramatic one, but a measurable one. And Bush is now, what, at 15 million a year, I think, that they're classifying. Just on a binge, an absolute binge.
There are a couple of interesting ones here, one of which is the Federal Procurement Data System. Mm. It's sort of a database of where government contracts are going to.
Right.
And that's now been privatized to a company called Global Computer Enterprises Incorporated. And by doing so, it's no longer a publicly searchable source of information. People now have to purchase those, like who's getting what contract from this government,
right,
from this company.
Yeah. This is terrible. I mean, you know, Jonathan, what you are identifying is how the Bush administration, how this is not just the Bush administration. I mean, this is much bigger than the Bush administration. This is the whole conservative conspiracy, and I use that word in its classic sense. I mean, you know, the people getting together and conspiring, not necessarily in secret. I think they're doing it out in open. But the entire conservative conspiracy to destroy democracy as we have known it historically in the United States and replace it with corporate rule.
Absolutely.
And to no longer have a government accountable to we the people, but rather exclusively having a government accountable to very, very, very large and powerful multinational corporations, most of them not even based in the United States any longer.
Right.
And
there's,
you know,
one,
and the right wingers, it's so funny. The right wingers and the, particularly the Christian right, they go off on these things about, you know, the globalization is terrible, and you know, we can't have this, and this is the sign of the end days, that, you know, the globalization, and here it is. We're turning our government over to corporations. Well, like Homeland Security, we just gave this multi-billion-dollar contract to a company that's not even an American corporation. Where are the conservatives? You know, they've all been silenced or pushed out and replaced by these cons.
Right. One last point on this. Another issue that, along the exact same vein, the current national archivist, John Carlin, he had indicated that he was going to go through to the end of his term in 2005, which would be his 60th birthday. However, a few months ago, he submitted a letter stating his intent to resign this coming fall before his term was up, just as soon as the Senate can get around to confirm a new archivist.
Right. I remember when that happened.
Right. And there's speculation that he's nominated, or the president has nominated Alan Weinstein. And according to this, he's held in dubious esteem at best and has been criticized for having a penchant for privacy, not becoming a national archivist.
Yes. Yeah. And that actually was reported by the Center for American Progress some months ago when it happened. And you know, just again, you're absolutely right. Jonathan, by the way, what was the name of that website one more time?
Stupid Git, StupidGit. .com.
Okay. Great.
Thank
you.
It's a really good website.
Interesting. I'll check it out. Jonathan, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. 22 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Here's the economic update. The Economic Policy Institute issued a new report noting that while corporate profits have risen 62.2% since the peak of the last recovery, private sector wages have decreased by 0.6%. The worst record of any so-called recovery since World War II, and well under the historical average of 7.2% increase in wages. Instead, wages have gone down. But in the context, as the Center for American Progress points out, but in the context of the Bush administration's policies, the numbers are not that surprising. The White House has blocked efforts to increase the minimum wage. They've tried to strip 8 million workers of overtime pay protections. They've promoted the outsourcing of well-paid U.S. jobs to cheap overseas labor markets, all the while pushing billions in new tax breaks for chemical, energy, defense, and other corporations who are notoriously large contributors to the Republican Party. That and Dana Rohrabacher. This guy, you know, he's on Crossfire often. It's one of the few TV shows that I actually try to watch. It's, you know, it's interesting. It's on after I get off the air, so it's there. And in fact, this was on Crossfire. Dana Rohrabacher is this very, very toxic con, so-called Republican from California. He absolutely toes the con line. I mean, it's the antithesis. Dana Rohrabacher is the antithesis of a statesman. The opposite of a statesman. It's not, you know, what is good for the nation. It's not what is good for we the people. It's not. It's what is good for power politics. What is good for Dana Rohrabacher? What's going to line his pockets and the pockets of his buddies? What's going to keep him in office? And he's aggressive and articulate. He's very, very, and even, I suppose, a little bit charming, some may say. I don't find him that way, but Paul Begala seems to. Anyhow, on CNN's Crossfire last week, Dana Rohrabacher said this about Al Gore. Now, here's this guy, this Republican from California, criticizing Al Gore on national television for allowing the Taliban to exist. Okay, this is half the story. Wait till you get to the other half. But here's the first half of the story. Dana Rohrabacher said, and I quote, "Of course it's Al Gore, who knows a lot about incompetence, I might add, that got us into this mess. 9/11 was on the way. 9/11 was on the way by the time President Bush was inaugurated." But the Center for American Progress points out, and this is a federal document obtained by the Orange County Weekly. I'm assuming Rohrabacher represents Orange County. I may be wrong. It was Rohrabacher himself who, quote, maintained a cordial behind-the-scenes relationship with Osama bin Laden's associates in the Middle East, even while he mouthed his most severe anti-Taliban comments at public forums across the U.S., end quote. So he's doing one thing in private and another thing in public. I guess that goes beyond the antithesis of statesman. That goes right to hypocrite. But it gets better. Rohrabacher, quote, lobbied shamelessly for the Taliban throughout the 1990s. This is the era that he's blaming now Al Gore for allowing the Taliban to exist. Right? He's just blamed Al Gore for the Taliban, for 9/11. Rohrabacher, quote, lobbied shamelessly for the Taliban, end quote, throughout the 1990s, with a 1996 Washington newsletter pointing out his belief that, quote, the Taliban could provide stability, that its leaders were not terrorists or revolutionaries, and that it would develop a disciplined, moral society. Yes, Dana Rohrabacher's idea of a disciplined, moral society. The California Republican, Dana Rohrabacher, holding up the con ideal of a disciplined, moral society. The women are all wearing burqas. If they bring dishonor to their family, they're stoned or gasoline is poured on them. The main crop is opium. The communities are headed up, are led, are ruled by the churches. The Taliban, according to Dana Rohrabacher, in 1996, when it was no secret who these people were or what they were up to, it was just a year later, you know, that Bill Clinton was throwing 68 cruise missiles into the middle of Afghanistan trying to assassinate Osama bin Laden. I mean, it's not like it was a secret that bin Laden and al-Qaeda were there, and it certainly is not a secret what the Taliban was up to. Do you think the religious right in this country, the so-called religious Reich in this country, because I don't consider them religious, I consider them sanctimonious. These multi-billionaires like Pat Robertson, multimillionaires like Jerry Falwell, taking money from Reverend Moon. And here, this, their idea, or at least Dana Rohrabacher, representing the Republican wing of the Republican Party, the Taliban will develop a disciplined moral society that did not harbor terrorists. Ignoring an explicit federal law banning unauthorized individual attempts to conduct American foreign policy. And you get this, there's a law against individuals going out and conducting foreign policy on behalf of the United States. It's supposed to be done by the State Department and by the Congress. And by the president, right? By our elected officials, by people who are accountable to us, all of us, not some guy from Orange County, California, or some guy from West Paducah, Kentucky, or something, whatever it may be. No, it's supposed to be representatives of all of we, the people, who conduct United States foreign policy. And there is a law on the books that says that you can't, no matter who you are, unless you are constitutionally authorized to do so. You know, in other words, the Secretary of State, a member of the President's Cabinet, the President, or acting on behalf of Congress with the consensus and consent of Congress. You cannot conduct American foreign policy. You cannot attempt to influence American foreign policy. Ignoring an explicit federal law banning unauthorized individual attempts to conduct American foreign policy, Rohrabacher, in April of 2001, This would have been, what, 3 months after the inauguration of George W. Bush? Before 9/11, of course. But 3 months after the Supreme Court appointed George Bush as our president, and he was inaugurated, he was... In April of 2001, Rohrabacher, quote, opened negotiations with the Taliban at the Sheraton Hotel in Doha, Qatar, end quote, meeting with Taliban Foreign Minister Mullah Waqil Ahmed Mutawakil, an advisor to Mullah Omar. So here you got, I mean, this reminds me of the old photo from 1987, I believe it was, either 86 or 87, when Don Rumsfeld went over to Iraq to help facilitate the sale of poison gas precursors and military hardware to Saddam Hussein for his war with Iran. And the picture of Rumsfeld shaking hands with Hussein. That it's funny, when it came out a year or so ago, there were actually cons who were saying it was a faked picture. But in fact, there were many of them. And of course, it was no secret. And so here now we have Rohrabacher, Dana Rohrabacher. I mean, it's just incredible. These guys, you know, they're all over the TV. It's like, you know, former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie, Rohrabacher. And here he is meeting with Mullah Omar's number two guy. He not just meeting with, he opened negotiations with the Taliban at the Sheraton Hotel in Qatar in 2001. Speaking of Ed Gillespie, former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie, I received two emails from him this week. I just have to share these with you. These are so precious. And one of them has a call for action that you might actually want to come up, you know, take them up on it. I'll share with you the call for action one first before this break. The Bush-Cheney 04 National Headquarters in Virginia has asked us to identify 1,600, quote, friendly congregations, end quote, in Pennsylvania, where voters friendly to President Bush might gather on a regular basis. In each of these friendly congregations, we would like to identify a volunteer coordinator who can help distribute general information to other supporters. If you'd like to serve as a coordinator in your place of worship, I'd like to ask you if you would like to serve. We plan to undertake activities such as distributing general information, updates, or voter registration materials in a place accessible to your congregation. If you're interested, please email Luke Bernstein at lbernstein, L-B-E-R-N-S-T-E-I-N, at georgewbush.com, or you can call me. You can call me. This is Luke at 717-233-4066. If you'd like to be one of those folks who help the Bush-Cheney campaign spread the word to friendly congregations, wouldn't that be an interesting one to infiltrate? 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Some fishing practices are tearing up the sides of underwater mountains, and a group of scientists is lobbying to protect these deep water environments. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The bottom of the ocean is crisscrossed by volcanoes and steep mountains. Some of these underwater peaks are called seamounts. Scientists say they're teeming with marine creatures that include cold water coral, crabs, and a wide variety of fish. But they also say trawling gear is destroying those seamounts before people even have a chance to study them. Sylvia Earle directs the Global Marine Program of a nonprofit group called Conservation International.
Of the seamounts presently known, a very small number have been explored, just a few more than 200, and every one that's been looked at so far has evidence of fishing pressure already. As soon as they're described and located, there are typically fishing interests there with trawls to extract the commercially valuable species.
Earl says trawlers use metal plates or nets that are dragged across the seafloor. She says that can be extremely destructive because the nets pull up everything in their path.
Trawling, just by its very nature, is like using a bulldozer. It just destroys the entire ecosystem.
Earl and more than 1,000 other marine scientists are calling for an immediate ban on trawling in the deep ocean. They presented a statement to a United Nations meeting earlier this year. They're hoping that a UN resolution will be adopted to bring all nations together in protecting seamounts and other fragile ocean areas. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Over the mountains, down in the valley, lives a former talk show host. Everybody knows his name.
Uh-oh. Broadcasting from the high up in the green mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont here, Tom Hartman with you from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone. The second email that I got from the GOP was, of course, from a former Enron lobbyist, Ed Gillespie, now RNC chairman, asking if I would help spread the word about the wonders of the Medicare discount cards, and it had a link to a website that would allow me to write a letter to the editor of my state and local newspapers. And so, okay. The wonder, you know, I encourage you to sign up on some of these political parties' websites. Sometimes you find good tools. One of the folks in our chat room, Scaligrim, he says, I got enough info now. I want to do something with it. And you say vote and protest. I've been there and it doesn't work. I'm not going to stop voting. But what else? Huh? What else? Well, here's the what else. I mean, there are so many what else's. When you look at every historic movement for change, for positive or negative, frankly, I mean, whether you want to chronicle, as William Shearer did, the rise of Adolf Hitler, or whether you want to chronicle the end of slavery in the United States, or the woman suffrage movement, or the civil rights movement, they all began. Or, for that matter, the modern-day corporate con movement, you know, where the cons have taken over the Republican Party, they all began with a relatively small group of people who had a vision and who really believed it, who really believed in it. And they began to share that vision with others. I do this 3 hours a day, 5 days a week on this radio program. We're in our second year of doing this. You can do it with your friends, with your neighbors. Educate yourself. Get out there. Read BuzzFlash. Read CommonDreams.org. Read OpEdNews.com. Read MakeThemAccountable.org or .com. I mean, there are so many good resources to educate yourself so that you can win the water cooler wars, as it were. Tell people about RadioPower.org and the great programming that they have. White Rose Society, the archives that people can listen to there. Tell people about Sirius Left and XM Left if they happen to be listening to satellite radio. Tell them about, you know, this program on this station. Spread the word. The first challenge is not so much to be an activist or a protester, it's to be an educator. That is the first challenge, and that is something that all of us can always do more of. Thanks for being with us today. This is Tom Hartman. Thanks to Louise for producing our program, to Brad Walrod for our music, to Shelby in RadioPower.org for streaming us around the planet. Thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics, for being with us all these months. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to Jay for writing our theme music and performing it. Thanks to you for listening. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the Project for the New American Century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Wall said after reading We the People. And